Hello, fellow baseball nerds. Did I think I was ever going to utter those immortal words again? Probably not. What a joy it is to be back, and thank you for joining us on the Johnny and Josh Show. And as the name suggests, we've got him back as well. Ladies and gentlemen, the legend that is the greatest sports pundit on any medium, for my money, there's ever been in my lifetime, Mr. Josh Chetwynd. JC, we're back!
Gouldy, I can't believe we've gotten the team back together again. And I appreciate the kind words, but what I see myself as doing on this show is playing the role of personal catcher. Now, think of Eddie Perez or Charlie O'Brien with Greg Maddux for your beloved Braves, or for my Red Sox, Doug Mirabelli with Tim Wakefield. My role is to help a unique yet sometimes hard to handle talent, the legend that is Johnny Gould, get the best out of his game.
You see, if you're my catcher, my own personal catcher, then obviously I need my own personal bat boy. There is no one better for the job than the man, ladies and gentlemen, who was quoted as saying he was to TV what King Herod was to babysitting. Ladies and gentlemen, he's back. Eric, the producer!
Thank you very much, Johnny. Although, you know, my producer skills are back in a foray, but through a camera lens instead of, you know, but I'm still yelling your earpieces. It is good to be back. It is good to be your babysitter again. I'll probably regret it in a few minutes, though.
Buddy, you spent your whole career in that gallery wishing you were in front of the camera, forcing yourself onto the show. I even had to pretend to be late for a program back in the days of Channel 5 so you could get front. So this is exactly where you always planned to be. Part of the team, in front of the mic, part of the podcast.
Somebody's pretty got to be on in front of the camera, exactly.
Gouldy, Eric was always, no, yes, yes, yes.
Well, JC, as you know, we've both got great faces for radio, and that's why the podcast medium was always designed for us. But for those listeners who, it's so great to have everybody back for the baseball community, but if you were not viewers of Channel 5 Baseball, just to remind everybody, we did a show on Channel 5, 97 through to 2008, the only program that was on the channel for that duration from its origination in 97 to 2008. And here we are, 12 years later, doing a podcast. Could you ever imagine, JC, you and me, the social media legends that we're not, doing a podcast?
Yeah, I think you mispronounced it as like a poodcast for the first five times we talked about doing this. We've had such a great response from people who used to watch our show, but obviously we want to expand. And for those who don't know us, my background, I played for the Great Britain national team for 10 years. I am old and broken and finally hung up the cleats in 2016. And since the show ended way back when, I, after therapy, of course, was able to have some success writing books for a while. I also worked as a baseball agent, so I represented players, some who reached the major leagues, and we'll get an opportunity to talk about that as time goes by.
Eric, talking of old and broken, what have you been up to in the last
I've always
years?
Been bald and old and broken, and that's the thing. I've been, luckily enough, since we went off air in 2008 with the Channel 5 show, I've been able to still be involved in baseball and other sports as well. But I wouldn't give anything more than just be with you guys again and rehash the glory days and looking forward to more glory days.
Well, guys, I just want to say on a personal level, one, a massive thanks to the legend that is Nat Coombs and his team, Harry, Liam, and all the guys involved that have basically been the reason why we've got this podcast off the ground. Because if it had been left to us, which it has been for 12 years, it was never going to happen. So a massive nod to the boys. And obviously, guys, we want everybody, every single man, woman, and child that loves baseball to come in every week and listen to the podcast and be a part of the show, just as you were in the days of Channel 5. Now, I'm going to tell you about the social handles. Now, there's something I never thought I'd hear myself say. On Instagram and Twitter, it's at Johnny and Josh. Nice and easy. Johnny without an H. Don't put the H in. At Johnny and Josh. On Facebook, all you got to do is search the Johnny and Josh Show. And guys, do subscribe. Please join. Please be a part of the family. Get involved. We're going to do a mailbag every week. And we want your questions. We've got a few this week, and we've heard from many people telling us why and how they got into baseball. We'll try and get a few mentions as well. So, to kick things off in true style, welcome to the swinging 60s, and I'm not talking about the decade I was born in. I am, of course, talking about this ludicrous season, JC, that's gone from 162 regular season games to 60 regular season games. What the hell's going to happen, big guy, between now and September the 27th?
All right, Goldie. So there is precedence for this, but you got to go back to 1868. That was the last time there were 60 games in a big league season. And here are the three things you need to know, JG. You got to know that if you have a bad start in a 60-game season, you are completely out of it. And I think back to last year when the Washington Nationals went 19-31 to start the season. And then because it was a 162-game season, they were able to go on to win the World Series. In this year, even if they won their next 10 and went 29-31, they probably wouldn't make the playoffs because we're looking at about 31 games to make it. It's going to be really hard to separate when we get down to the wild cards. The playoffs are going to be the same, even though the season is only about 37% of a regular major league season. USA Today did an analysis before the year, and even with the 162 games, they thought that four teams in the National League, the Mets, Phillies, Reds, and Diamondbacks, would finish tied for the second wild card spot. Now, with the truncated season, we're looking at not only those four teams, but possibly two or three other teams tying at that number. So we are going to have a real logjam near the end of the season. The margin of error is going to be really low. And the last thing you need to understand about the 60-game season is that the schedules are not really going to be balanced. The way it's set up is that teams are going to play within their division and then play a certain number of games against regional rivals from the other league. So it's going to try and keep the games very closely compacted in terms of travel. What that means is that some teams are going to get a huge advantage. So if you're looking at last year's opponents' winning percentages, the Twins, Indians, Cardinals, Chicago White Sox, and Dodgers all have really easy schedules. The hardest schedules, Marlins, Angels, Orioles, Mariners, and Rockies.
JC, can I just pick up on that point? Because that's really interesting. You're looking at the records from last season in terms of determining what's going to be an easy schedule. I read another article which was talking about the comparison between 162 regular game season schedule compared to what we now have. And very interestingly, again, they confirm what you were saying. The Central Division's the ones that are definitely going to benefit, but they have the ones that are going to have the biggest change from relatively hard to relatively easy is the Reds. The Reds that a lot of people are tipping as a potential outsider in this crazy season. The Twins, the Cards, Cleveland, in that order, are going to have the easiest schedule by comparison to what they would have had it been 162 games. Now, this surprises me, by the way, and I'm interested in your point of view on this one, Eric, because you look at the fact that they've brought the divisions together, the American League and National League together, and I'm hating that. As a Braves fan, I'm hating the reality that we're now only going to be playing Eastern Division sides, which means we've got to play the Yankees, we've got to play Boston, we've got to play Tampa Bay. These are good sides. That is a tough schedule. And yet, according to these stats, it's the Central that's the real benefactor. Whereas I think, certainly in terms of the hardest job, I hate the fact that the Braves are now in a combined Eastern Division.
I always said that the National League and American League should always remain separate, but I always say they should never meet until they get to the World Series. Sure, have the odd exhibition game, pregame, all that stuff, but yes, now we're going to have interleague galore with this 60-game schedule. It's not really, you know, we got DH in both leagues. It's not really going to have a separation of who's going to be better, NL or AL.
You say galore, you know, but JC, it's actually what? It's a third. So you're still going to play two-thirds of their games against their own division.
When you're looking at 60 games, anything is possible. If we talk about a 162-game schedule, you could lose 100 games, you still win 62 games. That's the worst team in baseball. So when you have such a small sample size, you're going to have tremendous variation. Sure, there are going to be some of the teams we expect making it to the postseason, but I promise you there's going to be one or two teams right at the end of those 60 games who you had no idea, who you thought was going to be at the bottom of the basement, who are in the race because they just happened to pull together a pretty good run.
And another thing, Johnny, one thing to bear in mind, there'll be a lot of asterisks in the record book this season. Think of the standard, you know, target that a pitcher or a batter would go for as a successful season.
But should there be an asterisk, JC, in terms of, say, the World Series winner of 2021? Should there be an asterisk that it's not a real win? I mean, at the end of the day, the playing field is level for everybody. It's you still got to win
it. I agree, JG. I sort of think the season is the season. And even if the rules change, you play it, and whoever is the best deserves to carry the trophy at the end. And I think really what we're looking at is just so much uncertainty. You have uncertainty with rosters. You have uncertainty with different rules. It's all different. So it's going to be exciting, but it's going to be unlike anything we've seen before, and it's going to be a season unto itself.
And just to pick up on the last point, I love what you were telling us about the travel and the differences that that's going to make. Very interesting, of course, again, that the benefactors seem to be the likes of the Brewers, the Cubs, and they were talking about the mileage that they're going to be doing. It's sort of around the sort of 4,000 mileage. When you compare that to the Rangers, who are apparently going to be doing 14,706 miles by comparison. Is there a danger that some of the central teams may even end up going on buses rather than taking planes?
I mean, I wouldn't think it would be the worst idea. And, you know, we talk about exposure to COVID-19. The more you travel, the more you're exposed to it. So it puts those teams at a little bit more risk. Teams like the Rangers, you mentioned the Astros, who are going to go nearly 14,000 miles, Seattle Mariners, almost 12,000, A's and Rockies. That's a lot of travel for those teams. So you're going to have to watch closely that they are able to stay fit.
And how big an impact is that going to have on performance, given that they used to travel? I mean, that's what they do every season.
I think it's less about how difficult it's going to be for the teams to take tremendous travel, but the advantage for teams like the Brewers that you mentioned, the Cubs, the Tigers, Cardinals, and Reds in the Central, who are all traveling less than 5,000 miles. Having less travel is going to be an advantage.
Certainly come the playoffs. Okay.
Now, one more thing. Hang on. This is where I come in as my producer self. The All-Star game is not going to be played this year, of course. It would have been last week in Los Angeles at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
But there will be no All-Star game. So the MLB have decided that they will award the 2022 All-Star game to Dodger Stadium. Which brings us to a trivia question. There have only been two players who have represented five different clubs at the All-Star game. So which two players have represented five different baseball teams at the All-Star game? Let that cogitate in your mind. We'll give the answer at the end of today's show.
I know this is audio, but I'm putting my hand up because I want to ask a question. Can I ask for a clue? Are these two players from my era?
Two players would have been from the era, actually, conveniently enough, from the era that we were on air between 1997 and 2008.
Okay.
So, and one of them, here's another added clue just for everyone out there and you guys, because I know that you'll start crying if you don't get it right.
Yeah.
One of them actually played for my beloved Montreal Expos. Okay. And the other one actually played with the Atlanta Braves at one point in his career, Johnny.
Okay.
So there's your two clues out there in the ethos. You have until the end of the show to let it cogitate. Now, next topic.
Let us move on, because I'm going to throw out our second question, our second burning question of the podcast. All right, Gouldy, I know on a personal level, sometimes rules do not apply to you. Anyone who has seen you speeding late at night on the M4 will attest to this.
Allegedly.
You can either confirm nor deny. So even though the rules don't apply to you, you are a stickler for doing things by the book for others. So Gouldy, how are the rules going to change into the 2020 season? How is that going to affect
play? I'm going to take issue with you. First of all, the rules do apply to me, as they should, and the fact that I've lost my license three times proves it. So moving on swiftly. There are a number of changes, as you know, boys. The big three, obviously, the designated hitter is now not just going to be in the American League, it's in the National League, it's universal. We've got the three batter minimum or end an inning rule for the pitching change, and of course we've got the runner on second base to start extra innings. There are some other little ones. We'll talk about those later, but let's focus on the big three. Let's first of all start with the DH, obviously now universal. I'll be really interested to hear what you boys have got to say about this. It does beg the question, will this breathe new life into certain players? Matt Kemp springs to mind. You've got bad defensive players who can now be hidden on the DH in the National League that otherwise wouldn't have happened. Kyle Schwarber, of course, of the Cubs. You've got injured players who can now be rested in a DH position, which would only happen when it was interleague from the National League. The one that springs to mind for me, Ryan Braun, had him in my fancy team last year. You've got Hunter Pence in the Giants lineup. Of course, they've just lost Buster Posey. He's opted out. So that could be key for them. Cespedes at the Mets. Does that give J.D. Davis more opportunity and more at-bats because they could stick him at DH? Hopefully it will, because I think he's a fantasy lock. He's one of my sleeper tips. Thought I'd smash that one in. So I don't know. Let's focus on that one first of all, JC. What's your thoughts? Are you a fan of this decision?
No. I think I'm not old school, but there's certain rules that I don't like when they change because they affect the strategy of the game. And I've always liked the pitcher hitting because I feel like that is an enhanced element to strategy. Yeah. You got to determine when you're going to do double switches, when you're going to take a player, move them in the lineup, and do things in order to maximize your opportunity. That's strategy. The DH pulls that out. The DH ends pinch hitters to a certain extent. So I've never been a fan of that rule. I know it's inevitable. I know that Major League Baseball has been talking about this move, and I know this is going to probably speed it up moving forward. And great for expanding the careers of people like Matt Kemp. But as a fan of baseball, I'm not a purist, but I do like the fact that no DH means more strategy.
Let me just pick up on that, JC. And by the way, for the record, I 100% agree with you. Do you think that this is a rule that they will continue with beyond the COVID season, as we're calling it?
Yeah. So Major League Baseball and the Players Union are going to have to engage in collective bargaining after the season. There's going to be a lot of tension, as people who have followed along before this season know, to get to even 60 games was very difficult between Rob Manfred and Tony Clark, who's the head of the union. So it's already going to be tense, but one expectation has been that the DH will go league-wide, and the reason for that is it expands careers. Okay. And so the union really likes it because you're going to get guys like Matt Kemp getting a longer career.
Eric, I've read somewhere that the supposedly justification for introducing this was because it would allow them to rest the pitchers who could then just focus on pitching rather than hitting. Seems like a load of old toss, to be honest. Their at-bats don't long enough to make a difference. What do you think?
Yeah, I am heartbroken about this rule on a personal level because one of my favorite niche positions in baseball was the loogie. For those who don't know what that is, that's the left-handed one-out guy. And these were pitchers who would be in the bullpen and come in to face one left. As a left-handed pitcher, you have an advantage against the left-handed hitter. And would come in, face the one batter, either get them out or not get them out. And that would be the end of it for them. And I love this niche so much that I actually wrote a whole article, a absurdly long article, and created my own stat.
I read
called
it.
The Lump. Yeah.
I read
it's
it.
Called
I,
The Lump. Did you read about The Lump movie?
I read, you
read like two sentences.
No,
the
you,
Lump is
you said it yourself, lament. Buddy. It was an extremely long article. I think I got about halfway through it, but I loved
so,
it.
So, the Lump is the lamentably unproductive mound performance, and that's when you get called into the game to face the one batter, you don't get them out, and get pulled. So you literally do nothing positive. Yeah. You come in, don't get the batter out, you get pulled out of the game. We're not going to see that anymore out of relievers. Now, it's possible that a starter could face three batters and then get pulled if they are doing poorly. But I'm a little heartbroken about that rule. But that rule, as Eric mentioned, was going to come either way.
And that's the thing. If I was a GM or a manager of or the head scout of whatever major league team, you're now going to start thinking of like, okay, do I go for middle relievers who have more longevity? Do I go for with Joel Zamaya, for example? Would he have? Well, yes, he would have lasted as a closer, of course, but it would alter the way you think of middle relievers now and how you structure your bullpen.
Either way, you're going to be managing pitching rotations in a different way this season. You're going to have starters who aren't ready to go six, seven innings, maybe five innings at the most for certain teams, or they're going to piggyback pitchers. So we were already going to see sort of a strange situation. This rule has a longer impact. I think the rule to me that is most interesting that's going to be applied this year is the extra inning rule that you alluded to, Gouldie. That's the rule that if the teams are tied and we go into extra innings, that each team will start with a runner on second base. Now, this rule has been popular in international baseball for quite a long time, and they've played it in the minors for each of the last 2 years. And I think for fans who only watch major league games, this will be the most jarring change.
And I want to pick up on that, just rewinding to the three-batter minimum rule. Like the runner for extra innings being starting on second base, it's all about saving time. That they've been saying for a while, for the younger audience, games were going on too long. And the minor league experience with regards to when they weren't playing this player on second base in extra innings, and now they are, it has made a huge difference. That is fair to say, isn't it?
Absolutely. So in 2016 and 2017, there was analysis by Baseball America, and those were the last 2 years without the runner on second base to start extra innings. And in those games, 45% of them ended after one inning. You now fast forward to the last 2 years, 2018, 2019, 73% of the games ended after one inning. So that really cuts down. To give you a sense, 13 innings or longer. There were 133 games in the minor leagues in 2016 or 2017 that went 13 or longer. There were just five in 2018 and 2019 once we had this new rule.
That is a massive, massive change. Now, one thing I do have to ask, the rule change with regard to the three batter minimum, that was proposed in the offseason. That was not a reaction to COVID.
That's
is
right.
Is that right?
So that's correct. It would happen regardless.
Right. But they're going to flip back with the runner on, or are they? Are they going to keep that beyond COVID season?
I suspect they're going to consider it. One of the arguments that Major League Baseball made is that a lot of minor leaguers have now experienced this. I think what's most interesting about this rule is whether there's going to be sort of a pat strategy, a sort of regular strategy that teams are going to take, because you have a runner on second, and often teams will bunt the runner over to third, so you have one out, runner on third. It makes it relatively easy to get that one run in, right? You get two bites at the apple before the inning ends. And Major League Baseball, MLB.com, Tom Tango, who's just a great analyst, looked at this, and basically he came to the conclusion that the bunt is a good idea if you're the home team and you really only need to score one run. If you're the visiting team, you're probably going to want to swing away because one run's probably not going to win the game for you.
That is interesting. So the odds drop slightly for the away team with this change of rule, but only slightly. So in the end, it's actually not going to make that much difference.
Yeah, exactly. And there are other ways to move over a runner. I mean, if I'm the batter coming up with the runner on second and no outs, rather than bunting, try and hit behind the runner. Try and hit to the right side. So you stay inside the ball, hit to the right side. You're going to get the same effect, and maybe you're going to punch one through, score that run, and be on first base.
Okay, just need to give a quick reference to some of the other sort of small tweaks that have been introduced specifically for this season. There will be no restrictions on positions players pitching in 2020. I know there was a rule change discussed and installed in the past off season that would require teams to designate every player on the active roster as either a pitcher or a position player. They've thrown that one out. Suspended games, if weather forces are going to be cut short before it's official, it will be continued at a later date, but it won't start from scratch. They will continue from where they were before. That makes perfect sense to me. This one makes me laugh. Unsportsmanlike behavior, guys. They're, of course, looking to maintain physical distance because of COVID. Therefore, they don't want players getting in the face of an umpire, which is a shame, in fairness. That's a sort of part of the color. I imagine, Eric, that's one aspect that it is inevitable and it's obviously the right decision. Everyone's health is the most important factor here. But that will take a little edge off the joy of the game. Bench clear outs, etc.
I was going to say, there are no bench clearing brawls, right? No one's going to want to come out. You dose a player, you hit a player because they've done something funny, you're probably going to get away with it this year.
One quick last reference before I hear the bell. Wet rag. Pitchers will be permitted to carry a small wet rag in their back pocket to be used for moisture in lieu of licking their fingers. Again, obviously, from a COVID perspective, that's a great decision. They will not be able to access the rag while on the rubber. They must clearly wipe the fingers of their pitching hand dry before touching the ball. Water is the only substance that will be allowed on the rag.
Was okay, that bell sounded weak sauce right there.
The bell's there. Broken. It's only the second.
Hit it
time.
With authority, or don't hit it at all.
All right, here we go. Moving on, Johnny.
Okay, now one of the obvious factors: if a player bunts in an empty ballpark, does it still make a sound? Ambience or the lack of. JC, we've been watching football, Premier League football on the TV. You've got the option of having fake sound or not. If you don't, it's bizarre. Is it the same problem? How's it going to be for baseball without the crowd, without the noise, without the atmosphere?
So, Goldie, I can tell you as a former player that players feed off of the atmosphere, and there is an advantage in home parks. This is true in every sport, right? If your fans are behind you, it pumps you up. And this is an issue that I think each team is going to handle on a case-by-case basis. The Philadelphia Phillies, for all you video game fans, if you hear something familiar, they're planning on taking Sony's popular video game, MLB The Show, and using audio tracks from that in order to pump in. My favorite story was actually just recently Christian Yelich in summer camp, which is sort of this second spring training. When he was coming up to bat, they started at Miller Park, the team started pumping in boos to give him the feeling of a boo. And he said, I'm not at Wrigley Field. I'm at home. What's going on here? So they will notice it. There will definitely be ambiance. The other element that teams are trying to integrate are having cardboard cutouts in the stands, so it looks like people are there. And teams in the greatest capitalistic sense, although a lot of these teams are giving the money away to charity, are actually charging for people to take a picture of themselves and then put these cardboard cutouts into various seats. And my favorite of all these are the Oakland A's, who have different prices for these cardboard cutouts. One price is if you just want to have the cardboard cutout out there, that's $89. But if you want to have a special quote-unquote foul zone cardboard cutout, that's $149. What that means is that if a foul ball hits your cardboard cutout, they will send you that ball.
Love it. Love it. What a great idea. Could I, as an international supporter of the Atlanta Braves, could I send my money and get my cutout?
Absolutely. But I think that for most of these teams, they require you not to wear the kit for another team.
Okay. No, I'm thinking, obviously, of doing it with the Braves. But have the Braves announced any intentions for the cutout?
I haven't seen. The teams that I've seen, and some of these have already actually closed the window, are the Dodgers, who, typical Dodgers, it's $299 to get a prime seat for your cardboard cutout. The Giants are at $99. The Mets, $86. The Brewers at $50. I love this one. They actually put your cardboard cutout. Bob Uecker, famous player and broadcaster, is his 50th year as the voice of the Milwaukee Brewers. And they'll put your cardboard cutout in the Uecker seats. There used to be this great commercial where you'd say, I'm in the front row. And they actually move him to the worst seats in the stands. Astros are $100. Mention the A's. White Sox, $49 for the first weekend. That's already spent. The Royals, $40. Rangers, $50. They refer to their cardboard cutouts as the Doppelranger program. And the Mariners, they get tremendous props, $30. And if a foul ball hits their cardboard cutout, you get to keep it. That's the deal of the century.
That is the deal of the century. And what I love about these prices, it's almost representative of the sort of affluence of the different states, the different cities of America. The Dodgers, $149 for a field-level cutout and $299 for pavilion home run seats. I'm assuming your Detroit Tigers, given the success or not that they've had in recent years, they'll pay you to have your dugout, Eric.
See, I was just going to say, but if the Expos are still around, then yeah, you probably double the money there.
It will be interesting to see how teams handle the ambiance, though, the sound. And the Phillies executive VP, David Buck, made this comment to the Philadelphia Inquirer, which I thought was really interesting. He said, quote, it's a competitive issue because you don't want it to be so quiet in there. Say a catcher is moving inside or out. You don't want the batter to be able to hear that. You don't want batters to hear the shortstop yell to the second baseman, move over to your left. You do need some ambient noise in there. You don't want to blare it out and be ridiculous, but you do need to be fair.
Okay, thanks for that, guys. I'm going to move us on since Eric's bell seems to be broken, or is it?
No, there we go.
There we go.
All right, Goldie, my turn to ask a question. This is number 4 of our burning questions. We're saying baseball's back, but there are a bunch of guys who are choosing not to. Who are going to miss the season this year, Johnny? But also, who's getting a shot because so many big shoes are empty?
Well, JC, and these figures were were relevant when I looked at them, so I don't know if there's been any recent announcements, but certainly relevant the last thing I looked at. There are 13 players listed that have opted out because of COVID. There's at least 3 coaches, and I believe there's 11 to 13 umpires. We obviously don't have the name of the umpires. The 2 teams that are suffering the most is my Braves, unfortunately, and their fellow NL East partners, the Nationals. They've lost Joe Ross, Ryan Zimmerman, Wellington Castillo, the catcher. The Braves have also lost Felix Hernandez and Nick Mukakis, which is a big loss for us, who's had a fantastic autumn, summer in recent seasons. Some other big names, David Price, of course, newly at the Dodgers. He's opted out. Buster Posey, let's face it, the Giants lineup is relatively anemic as it is. To lose one of your absolute hitting superstars, that is a big, big loss. The Rockies have lost Ian Desmond. I think Tyson Ross is still a free agent. He's out. White Sox have lost Michael Kopech, the right-hander. Some big names in there and some opportunities. And we talked about the opportunity that the DH is going to offer. JD Davis being an obvious example down the Mets. Will he get, you know, consistent game time as a result? Who do you think is going to benefit from this? Because at the end of the day, I can't imagine that list is going to remain at 13. I think there are going to be more people opting out in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and Goldie, I'll take a sort of unpopular position on this, which is I think these guys are heroes in a certain way. Baseball, like any other sport, is all about the team concept and the group think. And there must have been tremendous pressure on each of these players not to opt out.
Yeah.
But for various different reasons, they understood that this was the best decision for them and their family. And at a time where health has to be paramount, if anyone has a concern about the possibility of impacting themselves, their children, their family, they need to step out. So credit to all of them. And it will have a tremendous impact. And you look at your Braves, Nick Markakis being gone was really directly led to the Braves recently signing Yasiel Puig. You also have Freddie Freeman, who had COVID-19. He's expected to come back, but he got hit really hard with it. Hit so hard that Nick Markakis actually said that the reason he was opting out was that he talked to Freeman, and Freeman sounded so bad that it really opened his eyes to things. The Nationals, another team you mentioned that has three players who have chosen to opt out, that's also impacted them a tremendous amount, with Ryan Zimmerman being out. Carter Kaboom, who is sort of one of their uber prospects, is going to get a reasonable chance to play third base this year. When we were talking about spring training earlier on, he was going to be sent down to the minors for more seasoning. It's really interesting with the 60-game schedule that a lot of teams in their 60-player pool, so each team starts with 30 players at the start of the season. After 2 weeks, it'll drop down to 28, and then another 2 weeks, it'll drop down to 26. So rosters are expanded, which means more players are going to get a chance to be at the big league level. But in that 60-player taxi squad, the additional 30 players, you're going to have a lot of teams that have decided to keep some of their uber, their big prospects, in that pool so that those players can keep on getting seasoning rather than sort of being sidelined. And there's always the possibility that some of those players are going to get to the major leagues vastly earlier than anticipated because of injury, because of COVID, because of opportunities that come up. So lots of opportunities for players who are going to be involved.
Eric, when you consider the age issue, you only have to look at the stats with the awful, awful news that we've had here in the UK with the people impacted by COVID. And they're always talking about those over 70 being particularly at risk, regardless of whether they have underlying health issues, etc. It is interesting to note that at the moment, only three coaches have opted out. Because obviously a lot of the coaches are more elderly. Eric Young at the Braves. And I know the Twins have lost both Bill Evers and Bob McClure. And this is interesting. They were taken out by the Twins after the Twins organization took their age and pre-existing conditions into consideration. They did not opt out themselves. And apparently the Twins will pay both of them their full wage. And I think that's classy. I love what the Twins have done there.
That is very classy, exactly. And with a pandemic like this, you just can't cut corners. I mean, I know it's controversial all around the world at the moment, but, you know, health does come first before sport. And speaking of age, you know, you think of, you know, other players that, you know, who are getting on. I mean, obviously, Ryan Zimmerman is, this was supposed to be his, potentially, his last season at the Nationals. He's the longest serving National with the organization at the moment. So it would have been a shame if he is opting out, if he doesn't come back next season. Apparently he is going to come back next season. So there will be a final hurrah for him if he does decide to retire or to go on to another team. But things like that get taken into consideration as well. Is this, you know, it's altering a lot of careers. It's altering a lot of, not just for coaches and managers, but players as well.
Well, especially, JC, players that are in pursuit of records, you know, reaching the 3,000 hit club, etc. Suddenly you've got a season where you've lost 100 games. That could be the difference maker.
Oh, for sure. We've seen this over the long span of baseball, though. We had players like Ted Williams who went away for World War II in Korea. It's not uncommon over the historical expanse to see players lose seasons for reasons out of their control. So this is no different. And honestly, in the grand scheme of things, a relatively minor consideration when we're talking about factors like health and safety.
Imagine if Cal Ripken Jr. was still doing his streak in the middle of all this.
Well, theoretically, as long as he's healthy, it would be easier because he's got
less
of a demanding season.
It's only 102 more games to play, and that's it.
But keep in mind, guys, if you go on the injured list now, what used to be the DL, it's a 10-day list, but say you're out for 2 weeks, so say you get COVID, you're looking at missing a quarter of the season right there. Yeah. It just takes one time on the disabled list, on the injured list, to basically take away a quarter of your season. It's really going to be in flux, assuming the season makes it all the way to the end.
You mentioned Cal Ripken Jr., and I want to ask the two of you, What was the length of his streak? The exact number, please.
Well, he broke Lou Gehrig's
2,130. It's not what I asked.
You're trying to throw trivia back. What I can tell you is I actually was at the game in which he tied Lou Gehrig.
Is that right? So you're
So that's the only thing I'm going to offer. And now we're going to move on. Bell, please.
2,632. It's the one stat I've never forgotten. Okay, the last of our five burning questions. JC, you've already made a small mention to the minor leagues. We know what's happening in the major leagues, but there's no minors. This is devastating news. You played in the minors. What's your input on this?
I'm deeply heartbroken, and this is a quiet side story that people haven't talked about, but will have such a long-term impact on baseball, the way players develop, and the way we look at the game. This is the first season without a minor league campaign since 1901. You're going to see that a lot of these teams do not come back. There were 160 teams last year, and most experts are expecting that about half of those teams will either go insolvent or will have to be sold because the teams can't keep on going. Major League Baseball was already planning to contract 42 teams, but I think that this is going to give them the excuse to contract more teams. And anyone who's ever been to a minor league baseball game, that is baseball in one of its purest forms. Now, I think minor leagues will continue to occur, but in a very different manner. I played minor league baseball in an independent minor league, the Frontier League. I'm actually wearing my Zanesville Grays cap from the Frontier League team I played for. And I think that those independent leagues have the opportunity to fill the void, but it's very different seeing a player who is unaffiliated with a major league team compared to watching these guys start in rookie ball and knowing that they're one day going to play for your favorite side at the highest level and watching them develop. It's a huge dynamic for the fan base, and one I'm afraid that's going to be lost in a tremendous way.
Let me ask you this. Do the major leagues take the independent minor league teams as seriously when they are scouting for potential talent as they do their own farm system? I'm assuming not.
I wouldn't say as much, because you don't have control over those players. And the assumption is that the best players are all playing in affiliated teams right now. But we're already seeing that they are shrinking that level. One thing that Major League Baseball did this year is that their amateur draft, the Rule 4 draft, was only 5 rounds this year. It is typically 40 rounds. So already this year, you're looking at 35 rounds of players who would have been in the minor leagues and affiliated minor leagues now moving over to independent ball. So I do think teams are going to take it vastly more seriously when independent baseball comes back. That's been pretty much closed off this year as well, too. So it's really tough if you're a minor leaguer to maintain your baseball. And actually, European players have an advantage here. There are a few affiliated minor leaguers who are European who are actually going to play in Europe, because European leagues have started up. Italy's playing, the Czech Republic's playing, the Netherlands are playing. So those players are actually getting to play baseball, and they're going to have an advantage this year compared to minor leaguers who are in the U.S.
Eric, there is some merit to shrinking the draft. I know there was a study by Baseball America, 3 decades of drafts from 81 to 2010. And according to that, fewer than 1 in 5 drafted and signed players actually made the majors. 1 in 5, fewer than. And in fact, fewer than 1 in 10 produced at least 0.1 wins above replacement. So it would suggest it's in need of contraction.
Julie, I want to push back on the study you mentioned, because you need to take more of a holistic look at the minor leagues. There's a term that's often used for minor leaguers who don't make it to the major leagues or really don't have much of a shot. They're called organizational players. And they play a vital role in terms of getting the players who do make it to the majors ready and prepared to be big league players. Because unless you get competition against solid, strong players at each of those levels, and you need the bodies, you need that level of talent in order to help those players at those levels, those guys who you're mentioning who actually do make it will never get to where they need to get to. What people forget is that major leaguers don't just sprout up overnight. They need to develop. Baseball is a real skill-specific sport. So if you draft a great athlete, for example, they sometimes need a tremendous amount of time to develop. The story that always comes to mind is Derek Jeter. When he started in the minors, he made dozens of errors. He was really raw. He was an incredible athlete. He needed that time to develop. And unless you have a vibrant minor league system, those players aren't going to be able to get better. And I think that goes for Europeans too. You need to give them that chance, and you need that for the knock-on effect of making baseball better in Europe. So I'm heartbroken about this from both the community level, where you're looking at, you know, towns like Pensacola, Florida, that are getting impacted by this, and I look at it from the development level as a bad choice. This is purely a money play, and that's just wrong.
JC, you just mentioned Pensacola. They've been quite original in how they're looking to react to the obvious revenue impact of COVID. I love the story that you mentioned to me. Could you share it?
Yeah, it's so the Pensacola Blue Wahoos, which are the AA affiliate for the Minnesota Twins, they have a stadium that's 5,038 people, and they were trying to figure out a way to raise revenue. They put the stadium on Airbnb. I love this. Full month, 30-plus room nights, they sold it out. No vacancy. $1,500 a night. You could have up to 10 people, and people love that. And I wonder if these cathedrals of baseball will become the next hotels of baseball.
Do you know if you're allowed access to the field?
Yeah, you have access to everything. You can go out, you can take grounders, you can have a game with your mates, make some BP.
What a great stag, dude.
What a great idea.
Could one of you get married again? We could all go, it would just be so much fun.
As long as you stay in your bubble.
Okay, so I think we're all in agreement. It's a disastrous piece of news, and perhaps one that isn't being focused on and needs to be done. Would you agree that some contraction was required, but just not to the degree they're now talking? You were saying potentially 50%, JC.
Yeah, I'm a strong sucker on this one, Gouldie. I really don't think that there should be any contraction. Okay. I, as a person who represented players for a number of years and saw what they went through in the minor leagues and the experience, every level is important. And the way it's set up is that it's a ladder from rookie league, single A, double A, triple A, and you need each of those levels. There are players that need each of these levels. So I'm not a fan of even the 42 that they had planned on.
Okay. JC, what round was Albert Pujols drafted?
It was late. I know it was very late.
I think it was the 13th. Was it the 13th?
Yeah. Well, the most famous was Mike Piazza. It was like the 62nd round or something like that, back when they had more than 40 rounds.
Right.
I mean, there are always those stories. Fangraphs, which is a great site, did a study of if you had a team made up only of players who were drafted after the 10th round, how good would that team be? And it was actually a competitive team. So the diamonds in the rough exist, and they will all be gone. It's a tremendous loss.
Do you know what I would love? I would love if somebody would put together the Hall of Famers. Let's face it, Albert is a future Hall of Famer. A Hall of Famers list of the lowest draft position, and put a team out and show you where they were drafted, where they ended up in the Hall of Fame. That itself proves your point that the minor leagues are so important to the lifeblood of this sport.
Gouldie will put on social media that Fangraphs story, which will give some names that can be considered for that type of honor.
Okay.
Speaking of Mike Piazza, who I hung out with Mike Piazza a lot in Italy doing the game development. And then one thing that Mike Piazza said to me was, Eric, never name drop.
Okay, Eric, well, I'm actually literally physically picking that name up off the floor. You mentioned it, and we are going to do our own name check here, and that's for the Ted Fred Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed what you heard so far, there are a couple of other shows that you might like as well.
So first up, let's give a shout out to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. That's a name probably all of you know. Got a chance to work with him at the BBC, amongst other places. Nat is joined by a crack team of journalists, analysts, players, and guests from across the ESPN galaxy to bring you the definitive transatlantic NFL podcast. Dropping into your podcatcher of choice once a week during the offseason, they'll bring you everything you need to know from around the league, the combine, the draft, and much, much more. So if you're a veteran fan or new to the sport, all you need to do is come get some. Do you like that? Get some. Search the Nat Coombs Show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook too. But wait, there's more.
Everything you need to know about the NBA is all in one place. It's the Anytime NBA Show hosted by Yanni Aruba. It's your weekly fix of news and views, in-depth analysis, and banging features. Each episode will get you set looking at the key stories with terrific guests from all around the NBA globe. So whether you're a basketball veteran or in your rookie season, come and join and search Anytime NBA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
We love the NBA. We love Nat. We love the Nat Coombs Show. He's an absolute top boy, and he's the main reason Nat, Harry, Liam, we are doing the Johnny and Josh show. So massive hat tip to the boys. Now, moving on swiftly in a seamless segue, it's time to do the mailbag. There goes the bell. Time to do the mailbag, boys. We asked a simple question, and obviously this is our pilot, so we've not had a chance to really engage yet with the listeners. But we did ask the question, what got you into baseball? Guess what was the number one response?
I know it. Can I say it, or do we not want to give it away?
Of course you can. Say it.
Insomnia.
Insomnia. And do you know what? Dr. Linz, that's all he wrote. Insomnia. I love that. We had Glenn's mentioning it, Tony mentioning it. I know it was very much what was mentioned in our Channel 5 research, which you will remember we did, Eric. Apparently, it was night workers, night shift workers. It was students, obviously.
Coming back from the pub.
That's right. And breastfeeding mothers, which was my third favorite one. There you go. Those are our main watchers, and I assume they may even be on.
And those kids being breastfed are over 20 years old now. That makes me feel really old.
How scary.
Hopefully not being breastfed anymore.
Yeah. This is a family show. Come on.
Absolutely. Now, the other reasons that were given, I'm going to mention a few. Andrew Jowett, that's at Who Joe. I think you showed a replay of a team coming back from 14-2 down. I know this was a game that you've always referred as one of your all-time favourites, Eric, with three innings to go in 2001 when he was at uni, randomly caught it with a mate, just fell in love, watched every show after, loved you guys in the gaps as much as the sport. Andrew, you know what to say to get on this podcast. Daniel Allard, love this. This is all he wrote, guys. Your show, Daniel. You legend. We got Trisk Iadica, Armed Forces Radio in the 80s. Remember, we talked about that on the show, which was a mainstay of many baseball fans pre-Channel 5 on MW. Oh, and then CBS broadcasted games on cable TV. Channel 4 then, of course, did the American sports with the American football. And then over to Channel 5 with Todd Maclin. And you'll love this. And the one that left the building quicker than Elvis, which, of course, is a reference to Tommy Boy, the original presenter. Liz Britton. I know we know Liz.
Yeah, an old fan.
Yes.
Liz is at LizB3, saw a few regular season games on Channel 5 in 97, was in Florida visiting family when the Marlins made the playoffs. Just amazing to come home and be able to watch every World Series game in the UK. The excitement of that series and the vibe of the show got me hooked. You will, of course, remember the Marlins. They went and won it in 97. That was the big story, wasn't it?
Yes, it was indeed.
Thank you for that input. That was...
Not the best color man in the game for nothing.
Okay, we got Woz at Heronman 68, part-time job as a night manager. We referenced that was one of our major viewers. Was anybody doing a night shift of a probation hostel? Good for you, Woz. That's a great job. By 1 a.m. everyone was in bed and I needed to be entertained. Channel 5 had baseball, started watching it, loved it, chose the D-backs as they were an expansion team, and I think the year I started watching, never looked back. Brilliant. Jordan North watching the guys, started during my college university years, started following the Giants then. Do you realise, JC, we ruined more educations than any other single factor out there? Guys, we did ask for some questions. Obviously, it's early days, but we have got a few, and I'd love to get them on as well. We got Roger at Fodsox. If you could move one team to another city, which would it be and why? Erika, I'm assuming it's the Nationals back to Montreal.
Bring the Nationals back to Montreal, even though they won the World Series last year.
JC, do you want a team to move?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather see more expansion. I know Nashville is a city that's looking at expansion. More than anything, I want teams to move out of bad stadiums. So I'm not a fan of the Tropicana. So Tampa Bay, if you want to stay in Tampa Bay, fine. Just get yourself a new stadium. But if not, go to another city.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, moving on.
We've got a couple of more questions, which I've got to get in because they've made the effort to get in touch.
Speed round.
Glenn 3025, which club is best set up to thrive in the shortened season? Any thoughts very quickly?
I would say even though David Price is one of the players who've opted out, I'll go with the Dodgers. I feel like their bench is so deep and they do have enough pitching that they were going to be a good team to begin with, and they'll do just as fine in the 60-game
Eric?
Schedule.
Yeah, I'm going Dodgers, and Twins is a sleeper, even though...
Sleeper! They're wide awake!
All right, fine. No one knows really picking them.
Yeah, go with the Padres.
They've got the third best hitting lineup, projected lineup in the whole of...
And Max Kepler from the European Game Development Program, might I add.
Absolutely. They're pitching, supposedly, the ninth best, and they've got one of the easiest schedules. So the Twins have to be, well, certainly to make the playoffs. There's no way they're not making the playoffs.
Sleeping Giants. And, of course, Clive Russell wants us to say this, former Major League Baseball international guru.
Absolutely. Ollie Champions would like to ask very quickly, favorite ballpark snacks. There you go. Very, very quickly. And that's for you, Eric.
Okay. That the Chicago Cubs footlong hot dog was pretty special.
Hey, you're going to love that, Eric. JC, as a Dodgers fan.
Yeah. The Dodger dog actually is one of my
overrated.
Like, it brings back memories of childhood. That and a little side of nachos.
And I'm sure Eric will know where I'm going. I'm going to Camden Yards. I'm going to Baltimore.
Oh, the pit beef by Boog Powell. That's my ballpark food. That's like haute cuisine.
You were salivating. Yeah. You put your arms around a man that was a lot larger than you. You looked him in the eyes. You'd only just met him. And you declared your love for him. That was how good that food was.
Boog Powell pit beef and sandwich at Camden Yards. Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Okay, well, that's the mailbag, guys. Keep them coming in. Instagram and Twitter at Johnny and Josh. Facebook search Johnny and Josh Show. Subscribe, get involved. We want to hear from you. We'll do our level best to come back to each and every one of you. Now, moving on. Eric, what have you got for us?
It's up to me now. So now we're taking a trip down memory lane. For the, you know, for those who don't remember, you know, don't even know us or weren't even born when we were doing our Channel 5 baseball show from 1997 to 2008, I've got questions regarding Channel 5. For the boys here. Ready?
Yep.
Yes.
Number one, our first big road trip that we did together, ensemble together, was in 2006, where we did 5 games in 5 days in 4 cities. Name the cities in order.
Oh, my God. Which year?
2006 was our first.
2006.
We went off air, and we went straight to Gatwick Airport, and we almost missed our flight because the game went to extra innings. And we went straight to the airport and did 5 games in 5 days in 4 cities. That's the clue there. Okay. Our first big run.
I remember the last two. Can I go backwards?
Yes.
The last two was the Cubs. The White Sox and the Cubs.
Correct.
And the Cubs, because I wasn't there. I had to go home.
No, you came to the Cubs, but you didn't go to the White Sox.
Yeah, I didn't come to the White Sox. I think we were also in San Francisco.
Kansas City and Cincinnati.
Geez.
They all run together.
Hey, just caught up to your memories. We landed first in Atlanta.
Oh, yes. That is embarrassing for you.
Yes, Johnny.
Oh, my God.
We landed in Atlanta.
Okay, yeah.
And you interviewed John Schmoltz afterwards. Then we went on to, we took a flight the very next day and went to...
another city.
and I ate pit
Baltimore.
Beef.
Baltimore.
Then we went to Baltimore.
Yes.
We did Camden Yards, interviewed Boog Powell. We had Nick Markakis hit a home run, I remember. And then we took a flight to
Chicago.
Cincinnati.
Oh. Cincinnati. I thought we did.
Yeah, we're already on. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's our third city.
You had 5 games in 5 days in 4 cities. Nul point for both of you. Nul point. That was terrible. Okay. 2004 was the last year my beloved Expos were broadcast on Channel 5. Yeah. And they moved to Washington, and we broadcast the Washington Nationals. Who was the manager in that overlap? Who was managing the Expos and then managing the Nats in 2004-2005? Hall of Famer.
Davey Johnson. No, it's Hall of Famer.
Wow. Okay. His name's only Frank Robinson. That's all right. Okay.
Heard of him. I've definitely heard of him. He won the Triple Crown.
Right, 0 for 2,
boys.
I think
he's professional. His hitting career.
Coming on. Okay. Question number 3. Game 3 of the 2005 World Series between the Astros and the White Sox.
Yes.
Johnny, you were in the studio with David Langell. Josh, yes. you were in Houston giving us reporting live from the field.
I broadcast with Simon Brotherton.
That's right.
I didn't even get to go to the loo. At least those guys had breaks.
Extra innings.
That game, we came on air just after 12:30 a.m., just after midnight. We went on air at 12:30 a.m. 14 innings later, what time did we go off air?
7:30 a.m.
Correct.
Thank you. One point, JG.
Okay, now moving on. In the 12 seasons that we were on air on Channel 5 between 1997 and 2008, 8 different teams have won the World Series. Name them.
Marlins,
the World Series.
Yankees, Red Sox,
Cardinals, Boston, Red Sox,
White Sox.
White Sox?
Did they? Phillies.
Phillies, two more.
Okay, Padres?
No.
Oh.
No.
Giants?
No.
Yes, Giants.
No.
Angels.
Angels.
Rally Monkeys.
Boston, the Giants.
Yes. D-backs. D-backs.
Correct. There's your eight. Yeah. And finally,
all right, Goldie.
Finally, in 2002, Josh joined our family on Channel 5, and he came to sit in the hot seat next to you, Johnny. And then also, that was his first All-Star game in 2002. Who won the 2002 All-Star game that we
broadcasted? It was a tie. It was a tie.
Very well done. It was a trick question. It was actually the only time the All-Star game got tied. I will give the points to nobody, actually. That was a terrible job. And now it's time to reveal the trivia answer. See how I segue now from the All-Star game to our All-Star game trivia answer, where I asked you both name the only two players to have played for five different teams at the All-Star game.
Okay. Can I go first? Because I got no clue about the second one, but I think I know one of them.
One of them I said played for the Expos, and the other one actually played for your Braves at one point.
Yeah, okay. So the one I'm going for, Gary Sheffield.
Very well done. Yes.
Very correct.
Yes. Okay.
That was really good.
Johnny, do you know the second?
No, I've absolutely no clue. I've been racking my brains. I've done nothing there.
All right. I'll give a guess on the second one. Could be wrong. Moises Alou.
Ooh. Good shout.
That is the correct answer.
That is proper trivia. Now, guys, we cannot end this podcast, and I know there's an awful lot
of people. I'm not done yet.
Oh, you're not done. Oh, sorry.
This is the point where I just quickly reference Eric Jantz's baseball book of the week. Hot off the presses. Local boy to these shores. Ryan Ferguson, Conflict. He's a bit of a, he's been kind enough to send me this book. We're actually mentioned in the book, hence why I'm plugging it. So that's my baseball book of the week, available, I guess, in some shops. Conflict by Ryan Ferguson, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the War for My Heart. A guy who's torn between being a Red Sox fan.
Is the rule that if someone mentions us in a book that you will mention it on the pod?
Or they send me a book. Hey, you never know. So there we go.
He's looking for freebies. That's so Eric.
JC, yeah. It does.
I like ribs as well.
It does make me laugh. I tell you what makes me laugh here is the fact that we have you. How many books have you written? Is it seven?
Seven.
Seven at the last count. You don't get the inaugural book mention on your very own show. He's gone with Ryan.
Jeez.
Now, quick reminder, Ryan Ferguson, who was one of the major, major emailers of the days of Channel 5, I'm sure Ryan used to refer to himself as, because he was only about 14, wasn't he, when he was first watching the show? And he used to tell us he'd watched it illegally. Mum and Dad didn't know. He was under the duvet. So we've destroyed his career, clearly, although at least he can write. But Ryan, didn't he say something along the lines that he was the future GM of the Boston Red Sox? Wasn't that what his sign-off used to be?
He traded himself to the Yankees.
And now he's traded. What the hell's that all about? How do you go from Boston to
you read about it. That's how you find out.
What a tiny link.
That's it for me. Over to Johnny.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. Boys, before we just wrap this up, there is one thing I want to do. I came across a tweet from the Essex Arrows Baseball Club. JC, you've played there?
I have. I got to play there in an international against Sweden. It was a
nice little facility.
Great field. The people who are all involved with the Essex Arrows team are top guys.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but their field was vandalized just recently. And I saw pictures online. Absolutely heartbreaking. Massive hole in the roof, ripped out seats. They've knocked a wall down. I mean, quite significant. Not just somebody put a bit of spray paint. I mean, proper antisocial behavior. And when you consider how much effort goes in, volunteers at the Essex Arrows, it just broke my heart when I saw that. So they've started up a GoFundMe page, guys. Now, to date, their target is just 1,000. They're not being overambitious. They've raised £535. I'm going to give one guy a mention. I noticed on the site, Sterling Little, he's funded them £100. Well done, Sterling. Sterling by name, Sterling by nature. Do you like that, boys? Do you like that there?
Trademark.
Yeah, they've been playing there for, over 35 years at Waltham Abbey. The Arrows play in the NBL, which, of course, is the National Baseball League, which is the top division in the UK. The Archers, I love that. That's the other name, the Archers. The Arrows and the Archers, you've got to love that. In single A, and they've got a youth program affiliated to the BBF, the British Baseball Federation. They need our help, guys. So if you're out this weekend, one less round of drinks and stick a fiver their way. Let's raise the money to put that field back in the shape that it is. So sending all the love from the podcast to the Essex Arrows Baseball Club. So if you've got any needs out there in the UK baseball community, we do want to hear from you guys, not just specifically about the major leagues, about what you guys are getting up to. We want you to be as much a part of this show as everyone else. Massive, massive thanks to everybody. that's involved. A quick mention again, Instagram and Twitter, at Johnny and Josh. That's a strap line. Facebook, search The Johnny and Josh Show. Do subscribe. Do sign up. Be a part of the family. Boys, I can see Eric is now chomping on the waffle. I knew it was only a matter of time before he got stuck in. It's the pilot. What's it felt? How's it felt? Back in the groove?
Love it, Goldie. It's always a pleasure with the two of you. Even when Eric is eating and it's an unsightly thing to behold. Great fun, guys. I hope we just keep this going.
It's as if we never left.
I didn't. I'm still at the ITN studio every Wednesday and Sunday.
Okay, don't rub our noses in it. For those of you not aware, we've obviously pre-recorded this. JC's had to get up at 5:30 in the morning American time to do this, so he's looking a little blurry-eyed. So you'll be grateful that this is predominantly just an audio output, guys. I want to thank you. It's great to have the family back. The boys of summer are back on the Johnny and Josh Show, and that bloke that used to be a producer. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being a part of it. We wish you a very good weekend. Enjoy yourselves, and we look forward to having your company next week.